Morning, everybody. If you came prepared to partner with what God's doing here as a continued act of worship and trust and unity with this community, the ushers are going to come forward and pass a funny-looking little bag, and that would be the time to do that. This is week three of a series called Hand Me Down that we've been in. Jonathan kicked it off for us a few weeks ago. With the idea that as parents, we would parent with the end in mind, because we're taking responsibility in part for the heart of a child, and so that we would parent with a certain kind of person in mind, trying to let God reveal who He's wired them to be and to do that intentionally. Last week we talked about, even if you don't have your own children, you're still a son or daughter of somebody, and there's a responsibility for honor and grace and mercy that comes with that. So past couple weeks have been great. Spinning off all kinds of really great conversations. Today, we've got a couple couples with us. Jonathan and I realized early on, just as we were planning with the rest of the team this particular series, that between the two of us, if we took all five of our kids and took all their ages and added them together, there are still some people in our community that have kids older. So my oldest is 7, Jonathan's is 6, and so there's a difference between what we're learning and what we could say in nuggets and as helpful as we would hope that would be. There's a difference between that and the people who've actually lived it. And this is one of those things that we just want to hear from people in our community that have lived it and that we can benefit from by hearing their experience. And so we've got Greg and Chris Stoner, who are key to what happens here at Cross Point and what Cross Point is all about. And then we've got Ralph and Luella Smith, who are also just key to what Cross Point is and have been very involved for a long time with this community. Greg and Chris have two daughters, Courtney and Kelsey, that are 15 and 17, and Ralph and Luella have two children as well. They're 23 and 28, Laura and Steve. And so let's give them a Cross Point welcome. The reason that we wanted to talk to you today was because when we sat around brainstorming, what does perfection look like?
You were unable to come to that, so you asked
right.
us?
Right. Yeah, we kept asking, who are flawless parents? Who are parents that never did a thing wrong? And we called a lot of churches. And so luckily you guys were here this morning. And no, we just we love you and we want to hear from you. And I think the first thing that we'd want to hear from you as parents is something that's really embarrassing that you don't want to share, kind of a mulligan moment from your history as a parent. So share with us an embarrassing episode as being moms and dads.
All right, this is so hard, and I just feel like I'm giving confession here. We have two children, and really they are wonderful. And all through elementary school, every parent conference we went to, we got to hear what great parents we were. And so I just thought, okay, here we go. So here we are in middle school. Our oldest son is headed. It's our first conference when he's in middle school. And Ralph and I go in, and I'm thinking, I said to Ralph, you know, Ralph, I really don't think we need to keep having these. So we sit down, and the teacher has this list of all these things he's doing. He's not turning in his homework. He has a horrible attitude. He did this. He did this. He did this. And I stopped her. And I said, Steve Smith is a really common name. I don't think you're talking about my Steve Smith.
They really were, yeah.
Now I'm very a teacher. Nice. That was before I was there. I am a teacher. And I know they are still laughing about that in the teacher lounge. I know they are.
Very nice.
My Chris's family, she has an aunt and an uncle who lean pretty hard to the left politically. And if any of you know me at all, I lean pretty hard to the right politically. And we're not going to get into all that today because I know there are people on both sides. But I was, yeah. At any rate, I was often told when we got together with these family members, don't you say a word. Because not a political word. Anyway, so we were going to go visit her aunt and uncle in Washington, D.C. Chris's mom was here in town, so we went to D.C. Now, to give you an idea of how far, for those of us who are right-wingers, they lean to the left. Her aunt was the organizational president for the National Organization for Women. So she's pretty far left. I'm pretty far right. So, you know, we didn't talk about these things. And that's how we all get along, because that's what's important. So we're driving through D.C., getting a road tour. And Kelsey was very young. And I think she was 3 or 4 in a car seat. She's up in the front, and I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and Uncle Dave's in the driver's seat, and he's pointing out all the different things. And we drive by the White House, and this was during the Clinton administration. And he says, and this is where the president lives. And Kelsey immediately says, we don't like the president. Now, I had never told my daughter this. So I begin image management. Well, now, Kelsey, we don't know the president. How could we say something like that? And all I can think of is, oh, my gosh, I've done it. And I didn't even say a word. It was embarrassing. Anyway,
very nice. Yeah, I know you probably never said anything, but perhaps the donkey with a slash through it in your living room. You know, he doesn't really have that. I'm kidding. We talk a lot about the in smaller circles, it's easy to talk about the how-to kind of things. Here are some helpful steps in all the different ages, the ways of looking at your children, ways of looking at your role as a parent, and the whole list of how-tos, which I think have their place. But I think it'd be good for us right off the bat to hear, what did God do in you through your children? So rather than what he did through you for your children, what did God shape in you, reveal in you as parents through your children?
Nothing. No.
Question 3.
Our daughter really has a compassion for people, and it's God-inspired. When she was 6 or so, we were driving through a neighborhood, and they were getting ready to put a road through, and so they were going to buy the houses and annex them for the road. And I explained to her what was happening, and she became indignant and said, Dad, and looked at the whole family and said, we need to chain ourselves to the trees so that they can't do that, Dad. And so seeing that, you know, it really had an impact on me that, you know, this young woman or the young girl is really focused on helping people. So to foster that, she and I began helping at the Helping Hand Mission down in Raleigh, which is something that she really had wanted to do. And it really had an impact on me watching other people as they were helping themselves.
Yeah.
Here. Well, the thing that God has shaped in me is something that he just continues to work on, and he has, I didn't realize it, but he's been working on it for a long time. And it's actually, Gary Thomas talks a little bit about this in the book Sacred Parenting, and he has a chapter on leaving. And it's the whole idea of releasing control of our kids and letting go of them and kind of surrendering them. And I recognize that really that started happening when they were little, when you're carrying them everywhere, and then they want down and they want to walk all the time, and so you have to let them go and let them walk, and then they go to school and they come home and they start talking about their teacher, and their teacher, what their teacher has to say really kind of becomes a little bit more important than what I have to say. And so just kind of letting go. And then when they start dating and you don't have complete control over everything and you just have to trust that they're making wise choices. And now Kelsey is entering her senior year, and Courtney's entering her sophomore year, and I realize that our time with them is very, very limited, and sometimes it just feels like it's slipping away, and I'm losing control. And what I've come to realize is that it's God. It's ever going to end, because I don't think that we ever stop parenting our kids. It just always happens, and we're constantly having to trust them to God.
Yeah.
Good. I agree with, I'm sorry, my mind just went blank, what Chris just said. I'm so sorry, I couldn't have told you my name then. I agree with what Chris said, that parenting never ends. That was a shock to me. But anyway, that is another story. Parenting never ends. But what I've learned from Steve, and he was in college when we started coming here, so I'm so sad that you guys still get to know him. But he challenges my faith daily. When I'm around him, now this is a good story. Because he is so obedient to the Lord. Anyway, so he is now being deployed to Baghdad. Well, at his first deployment, he was going to Iraq. And so we were having lunch together, and I was struggling with this. And I said, Stephen, I feel like Job, that my worst fears have come to pass. And he said to me, he was very gentle. It was a chuckle, and it was a gentle. He says, Mom, God is bigger than your worst fears. He can handle this. Hmm. Anyway, Steve challenges my faith.
Hmm. For me, it was a character flaw, which I know you guys find that hard to believe that I have. When I was, but I had a real problem with patience. I mean, I would go into a rage when I was in my 20s, and I remember that didn't end when I walked down the aisle, for surprisingly. And so, as a young father, as my kids began to grow and begin to irritate me, and it didn't take very long. I remember a specific incident. One thing you don't want to ask us about is bedtime. We did a terrible job with that. And Courtney, our youngest daughter, did not like the crib. And she would, I'd put her in her crib, and she would go over the crib and go head first. I mean head first, thump on the floor. And I mean, I'd put her in bed like 10, 15 times. And she's screaming the whole time, and I'm just furious. And I was just taken to the edge, and at times I would yell, and what I recognized was that my character flaw, my lack of patience, was not just affecting me, it was affecting my wife, and it was affecting my children, because I saw how they reacted when I would go into a rage from time to time, and that made me beg God to help me with patience, because I was not able to handle it. And so I began praying daily, God, please give me the patience to parent my children and help me not to be a child beater.
It's a good prayer.
Yeah. It worked.
It's solid.
God answers prayers. This isn't going to make me look bad, is it?
We can edit it before we put it online, if that'll make you feel better. It's interesting, though. I mean, you came up around faith in Christ, and you'd heard about, you know, patience and how to interact, but not until you had children did you realize the communal aspect of why that's important. That's interesting.
Right. Yeah, I used to, I would read Galatians 5 and the fruits of the Spirit, and I'd say, okay, I'm doing good in that one. I just skip patience and then move on. And because I figure I'll get to that later. But what happened was God made me realize I needed to put that on the top of the pile and really get after it. And so I began really praying toward it. So.
Yeah. Don't you think it's interesting that you procrastinated patience?
No.
I'm kind of counting on the anger thing being gone, I guess. Two weeks ago, Jonathan talked about parenting with the end in mind. So can you give some specific examples of how you do that? How you weren't so much caught up in this is what they will do, but let's help. Let me do my role in revealing who God made them to be. How did that work out in your homes?
When Steve was little, he was such a risk taker. The doctors at the emergency room knew the sound of my name. I just felt like I should call them and say, okay, he's awake now, get our bed ready. You know, we'll be there. But I'm a teacher, you know. I'm going to take care of my kids, and they are not going to be injured on my watch, no matter what Steve is trying to do. So, like, when they were learning how to ride the bike, of course they had helmets. They had wrist guards. They had knee guards, elbow guards. They weren't going to get injured. I was, you know, it wasn't going to happen. Well, Steve, really, he is off the chart when it comes to risk taking, and I don't know why God gave me him to parent. But
Now he's in middle school. He's wanting to do these extreme sports. He wants to do rollerblading. I don't know, all the stuff he wanted to do. And I'm saying no to him. And Ralph takes me aside. This was so wise. And he said, Luella, you have got to let him take a risk. You have got to let him figure this out. There we go. So we did that.
Well, for us, I came from the same background as Luella. I was a teacher, and I can remember going in our first parent conferences, and even up until just a couple of years ago, meeting with teachers talking about our girls. And I would like to say that I don't care about grades as much as I do, but I really do care about grades. And, you know, I've had to kind of push back on that a little bit and ease up because I tend to be pretty intense in that area. But the one thing that I would say to them as a mom was, we really do care about grades. But what we care more about is their character. And so we'd just like to open the door for you to give us feedback on that. If you notice something in their character that you feel like isn't developing in the right way, then we want you to tell us about it, because that's really ultimately what we care about. And so just as they're getting older, and we sometimes will get a glimpse of who they become as people, I just am reminded that, okay, the character did really matter, and I just see that now as they're older just starting to be lived out.
Well, it's interesting, too, because with what you're saying, you're potentially setting yourself up for what could, I mean, you could consider it hurtful what you're hearing. If you're asking how are their grades, how's their attendance, stuff like that, that stuff obviously has merit, but you're asking about character. That's a review on the quality of your parenting.
Yeah, it's hard. I think that where I heard it from the first time and really learned it was when I was teaching. I was a first grade teacher, and I had a little boy in my class named Wesley. And I just loved Wesley. He was a great kid. But I just noticed this little thing that was happening in him, that he was so eager to please that he kind of became the goody two-shoes. And I was seeing that it was kind of turning his friends off. And so I talked to his parents a little bit about that, which now I don't even, you know, I hope that I would have the guts to do that. But it's kind of scary thinking about now. But I just went into it with him and just said I saw this happening, and that's the flip side of being a pleaser, and that it was kind of starting to affect his relationships. And I remember how thankful they were that I was willing to go there, because it was something that they couldn't see, because all you really see is your little world with your child, and here's my kid, and he's really great. But you don't always have the ability to see outside of that. Mm-hmm. And so they were really thankful for it, and I think that really made a huge statement to me as a parent. So at that point I wasn't a parent, but when we did become parents, I saw the real value in listening to what other people had to say about your kids.
Yeah. So in our culture, we're pretty driven. Everybody defines success differently, but success has been kind of the barometer of your worth as a human being. And how that translates then into parenting is, if my kid doesn't turn out to be a leader, I've done something wrong. Now, rationally, we know that, you know, we can't all be leaders. Most of us have to be followers if leadership has any value. So I know that that's turned out differently in both of your homes. So speak to that issue of raising leaders and followers.
Well, the thing we really focused on was service at our house. It was important whether it was at church or in the community. We really felt that we needed to be being active in helping other people. And I think that whether you want your children to be leaders or followers or whatever, understanding service is what Christ really came here to do. He was serving us all the time. And that was really, I think, where we tried to help our kids understand their role on earth, quite frankly.
For us, this leadership topic came up really early. It was when Kelsey was four, and she was in a four-year-old preschool class. She had a best friend that she did everything with named Hannah. And we went out to dinner or lunch one time with Hannah, and I remember saying to Kelsey, what would you like for lunch? And she said, I don't know, Hannah, what do you want? And I said, well, no, what do you want? I don't know, whatever Hannah wants, that's what I want. And so Hannah decided what they were going to eat, and it was so frustrating to me because she couldn't stand up for herself, you know. And so I remember going home. She was four. And it was such an important decision, you know. And so I remember I went home to my mom, and I called her, and I said, you know, she's such a follower. Why can't she just be a leader and stand up for herself? And my mom said something that I've just replayed over and over the years in my mind. And she said, Chris, everybody can't be a leader. Everybody's not a leader. That's not how they're wired. But you just need to teach her how to be a really great follower. And so that's what we did, because what is not natural for Kelsey is to stand up and lead. And it just doesn't come naturally for her. And so we just began early on trying to teach her how to follow and who to follow. And when we saw something that maybe wasn't right when we were in a group of kids, then we would say, we'd talk about that. What do you think would have been a better way to handle that? Or if we saw an attitude that was emerging that we maybe noticed that she'd picked up on from somebody else, we'd talk a little bit about that. And over the years, as she's matured, she has stepped into some leadership roles. Not necessarily because it's her giftedness or her passion, but it's because of who she is. Mm-hmm. And so in Turning Point, she's a leader. And the reason that she's a leader is because there are younger girls there that need a role model. And so she's really kind of stepped into something that doesn't come naturally, but she's learned to do it because she learned who to follow and how to follow. And it's kind of developed who she was. So.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, I would imagine even for people here, you say, I want to teach my kid to be a follower. There's something demeaning. If you don't think that through, it sounds like you're teaching your child to be a sheep. But just knowing your children and not knowing yours as well, but watching, you're basically saying the same thing, teaching them that servant heart. People are going to be drawn to that humility. I watch, you know, other students just drawn to the humility in your daughters. But because they're great followers, they understand followership. That's interesting. With the idea of parenting with the end in mind, I'm curious, how did that affect the rhythms that your families lived in? How did that affect the activities that you allowed? If you guys need to talk this out, I can wait.
I think he has a better answer. I mean, I think he does really well with this answer.
Well, we have time. You can both speak.
So, I'm sorry, the question.
The question is, how does parenting with the end in mind shape the kinds of rhythm that your family chooses, week to week, month to month? What kind of activities do you push or limit?
In our home, we wanted the family to be the focus of what was going on in that. I didn't think it was a long time that we had together. So we made the decision that our kids weren't going to have a TV at our house. And that freed up a lot of time for our family to be together. And still, Stephen and Laura talk about those times sitting around the kitchen table where we just talked. And it's probably our best memories of watching them grow up. Then also, we wanted them to learn really early on it's not about money. Instead of gifts, instead of things, we would give them experiences or trips or we would buy them books. We just felt like materialism just kind of could just suck them dry, and we wanted to fight against that.
Yeah, for us, it was there were several things that affected the way our lifestyle was. One was that we had decided early on that we were going to eat together as a family. We still do that as often as possible, but from the very beginning, we sat down for a meal once a day. We had decided that, and we had some friends who were further along than we were with kids, and they had done the same thing. The thing that I did personally was I was a telephone repairman when my girls were young, and at the time I could work as much as I wanted and make as much money as I wanted, because you could, once you got into double time, you were rolling and making big dough. And So, but I had chosen not to do that because I had learned, we had gone to some marriage seminars, and one of the things that struck me when, before we had kids, when I was listening to these parents whose kids were in college and beyond, and we knew some of these kids that were older than me that had problems, and the one thing that kept the house, we didn't have as nice a cars, we didn't have as nice a things, but the decision was based on other people's experience that I needed to spend time with my girls, and that was a change for me because I was on the path to try to get and acquire as many things as possible.
Gotcha.
I'm just going to say one other thing. I think that we are under this pressure to constantly have our kids in things, and you know we've got them signed up for preschool before they're born, and we have them on soccer teams, and we had seen how that could really be devastating to a family, just from some families that we were really close to, how just being stretched. So we really tried to, I mean, our girls did things. They did ballet and soccer and those kinds of things, but we did try to look at the big picture and figure out how it was going to affect our entire family. So often it's really easy to get caught up in when you've got a star, you know, tennis player that everybody in the family kind of navigates towards that. And so we just tried to look at how things affect the entire family and make decisions about our activities based on that so that there was balance.
I'm really hoping my children are uncoordinated and, yeah. You know, that just seems easier. I don't.
Well, Steve, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, so don't worry.
And that's our time. Oh, man. My next question is about your heart. How did parenting with the end in mind, and these rhythms and that sort of thing, how does it affect discipline and you too, staying on the same page with things like that?
Well, we weren't always on the same page. You know, for example, spanking, I approved of it, and she didn't. And we would talk about things without the children being around or within earshot because it was real important that whatever we did as a parenting team, that we would address the kids in a united front in whatever it was, whether it was them taking risks, whether it was discipline, how with regards to dating or whatever. We wanted to make sure that they could not kind of create a wedge between the two of us. Mm. And, you know, one thing you talk about with the end in mind, it wasn't so much we had an idea of what the end in mind was. We knew where their hearts were, and we tried to foster where their hearts were to grow.
Yeah.
So we ended up with very different children as a result. But we could see where they were and said, you know, that's where God has got them.
Sure.
I mean, ours was pretty much like Ralph and Luella's in that we tried to do things, support one another, even when we didn't agree necessarily on the way that they were handled and talk about it. But I really kind of want to address the issue of maybe for single parents or parents that are trying to do this alone, or especially parents that are divorced and you've got maybe there's some animosity between you and your ex-spouse, because that's, I mean, I grew up in a family where my parents were divorced. And one of the things that I think that my mom and dad did a fabulous job on is parenting us in spite of that. Mm. I mean, they couldn't make their marriage work, but they were 100% in on getting together to make our family work and make their parenting work. And my parents have been divorced for 35 years. And still to this day, I've never heard my dad or my mom say a bad word about each other. And I think there was respect for the other person's role as a parent. Maybe even if they didn't respect the person's actions or they didn't really like him as a spouse. And so my mom was in full support of what my dad said, and my dad was in full support of what my mom said. And if there was ever a time when we tried to, you know, yeah, mom won't let us do that, or, you know, and try to kind of, you know, wedge in, my dad would cut it off. And if your mom said that, then that's the way we're going to do it. And I know it's hard because, you know, our feelings are involved in it. Mm. But I just know that there are lots of situations that we're in, whether you play on a sports team or whether you're at work or whatever, where there are people on your team that you don't really like or that you don't get along with or that you wouldn't really choose to be friends with. And you come together because there's a common goal. And the common goal here is your kids and what's best for them. And I think that, you know, we can learn something from them.
Yeah, that's great. I want to ask you about what turned out to not be that big a deal. When we had our first, and even a little bit into the second, we had these values that, you know, I will die on that hill. That is going to happen. Before we had kids, our children will have no more than 10 toys apiece. And we said that to, I said that to my father-in-law, and when he got done laughing, we've got 10 toys under the cushion right now, or pieces rather. It's just, even in just 7 years, just the shift of, okay, wait a minute, I don't have to do battle on that hill. What are some examples?
Well, the biggest thing for us was to realize that earrings and tongue piercing and tattoos and all that really wasn't that critical to how our kids ended up. I think that's one I remember the most, is that we gave up on that. You know, we worried about their heart, their compassion, things that really were instrumental in where they were going to end up in that case.
Hmm. For me, I was a bit more rigid as a younger man, and I saw Santa as another way to spell Satan. And so for me, man, that was bad.
That's going to make for an interesting lunch. Yeah, for a lot of.
What did he
mean? This has, for me, this has selfishness, stupidity, and naivety all wrapped up into one nice little package. I won't mess it up for anybody. But basically, I had decided we were not going to go there. And when they asked, the truth would be told, and that's how it was going to happen. Because that's the way I was going to parent, and I was going to do a great job of that. Well, we made that decision, and I was probably more on to that than my wife was. So we're on this path, and her brother wanted to come for Christmas, you know, and they had four kids, and they said, you know, now you know, we said, you know, we don't do Santa. And so they didn't come. It doesn't visit our house. Well, they didn't visit our house either that Christmas because of that. So then later they decided to come. A couple years later, they wanted to come for Christmas. So we said, okay, yeah, come and we'll figure it out. We'll work it out somehow. Bottom line is, as time went on, I realized how stupid it was what I had decided on. And we would always fill the stockings the night before or the really early in the morning. And my girls, somehow, I didn't tell them this, but they somehow figured out that he was the one who filled those things, and so I just let them go with it, you know, believe it. They still do. I think they still think he's the one. I didn't want him getting credit for something I did. That was really what it was all about.
It's abundantly clear why you're sitting here today.
It's not going to make me look bad, right?
Little late. No, I get that. Parting shots. You've got one thing to say to a parent ever, a young parent, and one thing only. What is it?
I would love to redo. I would love to redo parenting again, and as our children grew up, I mean, I thought we were helping them develop spiritual goals and et cetera. But we would pray before meals. We would pray publicly before meals, and we taught them about tithing every Sunday. Our children were in church, and every Wednesday we were in church. And I thought that was enough. And when big things came up, we would pray about it. But I would so love to go back and teach them how to weave the the Bible and prayer into their life. Mm. Like when a problem would come up, we would just kind of brainstorm whatever. I would love to be able to say to them, oh, I wonder what the Bible really says about this. Or you know what? We're just going to have to stop right now. We've got to pray about this. This is something that we want God to be acting in. And this just grieves my heart to tell you this. I did not pray for my children daily. I mean, now I do. Our daughter's a social worker in Trinidad, Tobago, and Steve is a lieutenant in the Army and headed back to Iraq. I mean, a day doesn't go by that I don't lift them up to the Lord and say, God, just cover them with your grace. But I would love to do that. And I encourage young parents, just start from the beginning and don't depend, as wonderful as this church is, don't depend on this church to do that for your children.
Hmm. Yeah, I would say two things for us. Pray for your kids. We learned this from someone else. We have prayed for our daughters' husbands for years. And even though we haven't met them. And I'm pretty certain I have not met them yet. Anyway, second thing I would say...
Was that a threat?
No.
What was the second thing I said?
Oh, yeah, the other thing. This was really the most important thing that I learned. Well, yeah, not more important than prayer. We looked at other parents and that were further along than us, and we looked at the product that they produced. And if we liked what we saw, we picked their brains to death and said, how did you get your son to respect adults, or how did you get your daughter to be this way? And we asked them very specifically, what did you do to get this from them? And we listened to that advice, and that was probably the biggest thing we did, was we were constantly looking around and finding other people that had done it well and done it right. And we listened to their advice, and even if it was the polar opposite of what we were doing, we changed what we were doing and went with it. And that's how we ended up where we are.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that. I think it's funny. It comes back to that every time for the things that we're going to take seriously as people pursuing God, letting Christ shape our homes. It comes back to community every single time. Who do you have in your life that you allow to speak truth into your experience? Who do you have in your life that holds you up and encourages you? Who are the people that can tell you the truth even when you don't want to hear it? It hurts, but no, tell me more because wisdom says I need to have what you have. I want what works. I want to understand how to do these deep, fundamental, most important things well. And I'm only going to do that in the context of a community. And so that's the challenge for all of us. Whether you're a young parent, you've got, you know, your kids are older, you're not a parent, maybe you have no plans to be. Who's your community? Who challenges you? Who do you entrust your reality to? Who is that? If you don't have those people around for things such as parenting, something as important as raising children, if you don't have that would be our hope and our prayer and our challenge to you, that you would take that seriously. We want to just thank the Smiths and the Stoners. Let's... very much appreciate them. Shifting gears, there's just really not a great way to segue into this. Most of you know, if you haven't found out yet, last Sunday we celebrated this $405,000 raised in just a week to buy the 17 acres in Haiti. And this place, three services in a row, just went nuts. And what a mountaintop experience that was. But we found ourselves kind of in a valley by Tuesday. Danny and Leanne, they run the home with all the children. They're the mom and the dad of the home. 3 years ago, helped deliver a boy named Jabez, and his mother died during the process of his being born. And so he's been theirs the whole time. He is their son, and he died Tuesday morning. And absolutely devastating, as you can imagine. Due to the complications of his birth, he was without oxygen. He did have cerebral palsy and epilepsy. And then so when he picked up what seemed to be just a simple cold,
it complicated the situation, and very, very suddenly Tuesday morning, he died, just 3 years old. Obviously, Danny and Leanne are just, you know, it's just a punch to the gut, and the other kids in the home, they've lost their sibling, and it's a really big deal for all the reasons that you already know. I want us to recognize that our community hasn't just stepped up to say we are going to financially back and support what Haitian Children's Home is about. We're all in. We're all in, and our families overlap in this way too. And so we're all in our support and our love, and we want to grieve with them, our home and theirs. We want to support and encourage them, and we want to celebrate Jabez's life well. Jabez and his story has inspired, with no exaggeration, literally thousands upon thousands of people in different places around the globe. His story and what he's meant to Danny and Leanne, and people paying attention to that, has pulled in people from all over the place, not the least of which us, really by just a couple of degrees. Jabez is kind of responsible for our being involved in us knowing about the Haitian Children's Home. And so God did amazing things through that little boy in 3 years. And we just want to celebrate that, but we want to grieve with our friends as well. So here in a second, we're just going to be quiet and we're going to pray. And then I'll close us in prayer. But when we're done, there's a couple tables out here. On the first floor, and then on the second floor, there's a table. There's little colored pieces of paper. I just want to encourage you. I know most of you don't know who they are, but you get a sense of the level of grief that they're feeling. And so from our home to theirs, if you just want as long or as short as you want, a note of encouragement, a prayer, whatever occurs to you to send to them, and we're just going to put them all together, and they're going to have those forever as a reminder of our love and our support for them. So we're going to pray, and I just challenge you to go out there and fill one of those out for them, and we'll get it mailed in the next couple of days, okay? Let's pray. God, we grieve with our friends Danny and Leanne, and for the other children in the home that are obviously rattled. We celebrate what you're doing through us in Haiti, but we just grieve, and we trust that your heart is broken too. And so God, will you help us and other churches and everybody around them to serve as your shoulder and your ears and your words. He's touched so many people. And so God, thank you in your wisdom of how much you used that young boy and what the continuous rippling effect that has had on different communities and people and children around the world, especially in Haiti. So we celebrate him, and we thank you, and God help us to grieve and support well with our brothers and sisters in Haiti. We love you, we trust you, and we look forward to the day where moments like this are a distant, distant thing of the past. We pray in Jesus' name, amen. A couple tables out here, one table upstairs. Please go do that. Let's inundate them with love and support. We'll see you next week as we wrap up this series. Thanks, guys.